Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and you know, I am often asked by folks, hey, Dr. Mike, you got me so interested in food and health, and I've discovered my inner chef, my inner Emeril, my inner Mario. Where can I go to make this a reality? Well, folks, you know, I'm on faculty at the University of Montana, and if you just head on over to mc.umt.edu on your computer, hit that interweb thing, get over there, check out the business technology, and you will be able to see what an incredible cutting-edge two-year culinary program Chef Campbell has put together. Satisfy all your desires, really help you achieve what you need to achieve in the culinary world and be on the cutting edge. And speaking of the cutting edge today, I am so delighted to have our guest, Kiran Krishnan. He is a research microbiologist. He's been doing this, folks, a long, long time, over a decade and a half, where he has studied in the fields and the disciplines of molecular medicine and microbiology at the University of Iowa. He currently also functions as the chief scientific officer at Physicians Exclusive LLC and Microbiome Labs, and he conducts a very popular monthly microbiome series, a number of webinars through Rebel Health, a tribe group practitioner training program. So delighted to have you on the program with us today, Kiran. Thanks for being here. So much to talk about with the gut microbiome, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. It's and first of all, let me say thank you so much for having me. This is a topic, of course, that I love talking about any given chance that I have, because we are really at the forefront and the cutting edge of what medicine and health and wellness is going to look like, you know, down the road. We're really starting to just discover ourselves right now. And one of the best estimates that I always like to point out to people is, so far, all of these years, you know, starting from the time of Hippocrates at 400 BC till now, we've only been working on 1% of our body. You know, about 99% of all our metabolic function, the genes within our body, the cells are all made up of microbes. And only 1% of our cells are actually human cells. Fascinating.
So when folks talk about this gut microbiome, for our listeners, I've talked about a number of times on the program throughout, but folks always kind of need to know, and certainly to get maybe a working definition from an esteemed expert like yourself. So for the common person, how do they understand what is a gut microbiome? What's a microbiome? How does that all work?
Yeah, and that's a great question to ask, because that term is becoming really popular. So the microbiome is defined as all of the organisms and their genetic elements in totality as they exist in and on the host, which in this case is a human body. We have a microbiome on virtually every part of our body. The digestive tract is the most dense in terms of the microbiome, with the most number of microbes and fungus and prokaryotes and amoebas, all kinds of things that are living in the gut. It's like this complex ecology. But our skin has its own microbiome, our hair, even our eyes. Everything that we used to think was sterile back in the day, you know, we used to always have this belief that urine is sterile, your blood is sterile, or even the womb is sterile. We're coming to find out that everything has microbes in it, and they control.
When I'm in the OR, I'm doing my case, I'm supposed to be all sterile. There's bugs crawling on my eyeballs. Get, you know, when I don't get my morning cocktail and I get oh man, there's bugs crawling all over me, and I start to cry. There really are bugs crawling all over me, right?
Literally, yeah. If you look at our skin, for every one skin cell that we have 33 microbes on our skin.
Holy cow! You know?
So it's a 33-to-1. Ratio that we're working with. And then in our body in general, we're about 10 trillion cells that make up our entire human body, but we've got over 100 trillion microbial cells in and on our body. So we are 10 times more bacteria than we're human. And the scary part is the exciting part. I wouldn't say scary, but for people it might seem scary because it might seem like they're infested. But the exciting part to learn is that we only have about 22,000 genes in our chromosomes that make up the human genome, and yet we have over 150,000, 150 times, so 3.5 million microbial genes in our system. So we're 150 to 200 times more bacteria than we are human in terms of the DNA that we use within our body as well. So they control so much of what we do.
And you hit on something earlier that is sort of near and dear to my heart as a chef and as a cardiologist, and pun totally intended there. The folks are used to my bad puns. It's not a complete show if we don't at least sneak a few in there. But that the most densely populated area in terms of the microbiome, as you mentioned, on the skin or in our lungs, hair, etc., though, is in our gut. So, you know, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because that seems to me to be kind of the big area where there's going to be an interaction between this, all these bacteria, and what we decide to eat.
Absolutely, and that's a fantastic point, because we really have to stop thinking about feeding ourselves. You know, what is it good? What's good for the human as a collective? What we really have to start thinking about is what's good for the microbes within the gut, because what's good for them will eventually lead to better health outcomes and sustaining wellness, because they control so much of what happens with our body on a daily basis. Now, there's even evidence that shows that the microbes within the gut control the types of microbes that live on your skin. So if you've got skin conditions that are caused by a imbalance in good and bad bacteria on your skin, a lot of that control is happening in the gut. The brain is controlled by microbes in the gut. So your emotions, your stress response, things like anxiety, depression, all of those things are now connected to the microbes within the gut. So the focus really should be what should we feed this amazing ecology that we have within the gut itself? And one of the things that people don't really understand about that ecology is that it's really a collection of thousands of microecologies. So each section of the gut, virtually every inch that you move down the, you know, 30-some-odd feet of intestinal tract that we have, the ecology is slightly different. The types of microbes that exist there, the quantity of them, what they do for one another, how they interact with the immune system, all of that changes as you move down from down from the mouth all the way down to the bottom. And how we feed those microbes will largely determine how healthy we are.
And you hit on another key phrase there, and I talk about it a lot in my previous book, the book before the last one, The Fallacy of the Calorie, and that's the effect these bacteria have on the immune system, because when we look at things like cardiovascular disease, obesity, diabetes, neurodegenerative diseases, certain types of cancers, the root commonality, certainly we keep coming back to again, is this chronic, ongoing, low-level inflammation. And now I'm hearing you talk about that, hey, there's some interaction possibly there.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we're actually doing a study on that. We're completing two studies. One is going to be publishing in the World Journal of Gastrointestinal Pathophysiology sometime in the next month or so. And it's a concept called metabolic endotoxemia. And basically what that shows is that the most toxic thing we do every single day is eating food. And if you don't have the right balance of microbes within your gut, if your immune system within the gut is not functioning properly, meaning it's not a overreactive, innate, inflammatory immune response every time you eat food, again, that's controlled by the types of bacteria within the gut. Every time you eat food, you get this huge spike in endotoxins. Endotoxins are basically toxins that are generated by the bacteria within your gut itself. These are good commensal bacteria, but they carry a toxin in their cell wall called LPS, lipopolysaccharide. When you eat food, some of these bacteria die off and release this toxin, and then if you don't have a healthy microbiome, the gut lining literally becomes permeable, and then those toxins seep into the system, and they exist within the circulatory system, causing low-grade chronic inflammation. And as a cardiologist who's you know, advanced in your knowledge, you know obviously that that low-grade chronic inflammation is the thing that really stokes the cardiovascular disease fire. And it's become a big focus. So what we did is we did a study where we looked at the spore-based probiotics that I work with right now in the research world, and we wanted to see if you add these spore-based probiotics to someone that has a gut imbalance, can the spore-based probiotics fix the imbalance and then protect them from this endotoxic response from eating food? And, of course, this endotoxic response comes about from eating processed foods, high-fat foods with right. bad fats in it, and then also foods that are really high in calories. So we were giving them a fast food breakfast, basically, the subjects, hash browns, you know, muffin, that kind of thing, but all fast food. And what we would do is give them a fast food breakfast.
That is so much the modern Western diet, and obviously yep. I mentioned the fallacy calories, how the modern Western diet is killing us, you know, and what we can do about it. And that is exactly it. You know, it's you know, as a chef, so to take my stethoscope off and, you know, grab my chef's knife and put my chef hat and jacket on, what I find is that when I go out and I get these really natural foods, And I'd like to get your opinion on this. My opinion has always been that we're in the process. You know, chefs went out about 10, 15 years ago. And to me, this is where the credit goes, not to any person like myself, primarily, you know, working as a vocation in medicine. But these young chefs went out and said, you know, we don't want the big semi coming up to the restaurant. We're going to go out and get this local food because it tastes better. We don't know if right. it's any healthier than this or that, but you know what? It tastes better. Customers willing to pay a little bit more to get real food. Boom, it's taken off. And then now we're starting to see a difference when you eat that type of diet versus this one. And it only makes sense to me because you said these microbes have always been with us, haven't they? This isn't something new, is it?
Right. These microbes have always been there with us, and they've been there in a protective role. And the modern lifestyle is what throws off the balance. You know, our the fluoride in our drinking water, the chlorine in our drinking water, all of the chemicals that we're exposed to on a daily basis. On average, a Westerner is exposed to somewhere around 80,000 chemicals a day, you know, the flame retardant things in your car and so on, all of these things.
Wow.
And of course, things like glyphosate on the crops that we consume, all of these things have a real huge impact on the status of the microbiome, the quality of the types of bugs you have within your gut. And since those guys are there to protect us from the process of eating, consuming calories and things like that, when we throw them off, then we lose that critical protection. And what we were able to show in our study is, you know, if you give someone a fast food breakfast, for example, within 5 hours, we see a five-fold increase in toxicity in the body that we can
Wow.
measure in the blood and in the serum. And that toxicity actually takes the body almost 2 weeks to recover from a single meal. So imagine doing this every single day, 2-3 times a day. Your body never recovers from this inflammation and toxicity, and that's really the fire that starts stoking most of these chronic illnesses. We put the people on an effective probiotic.
It sounds like basically we're taking our gut microbiome and, you know, without any training and throwing them in the MMA ring like every day.
Every single day. The gut is this. It's a cauldron of things that are happening, right? And people think of our skin as the biggest barrier to the outside world, but in fact, it's the gut because we're putting all kinds of stuff in there. And it's the job of the microbes within the gut to protect that barrier between the outside world, which is the digestive tract, the lumen, and the inside world, which is inside the intestinal lining. And without that protection from the gut bacteria, all of these toxins and things we're exposed to just get leaked right in into the circulatory system and causes low-grade chronic inflammation. You know, there was a paper I saw in 2015, that categorized this chronic low-grade inflammation from intestinal permeability as the number one cause of death and morbidity and mortality worldwide. because it's now tied to virtually every chronic disease.
And it just correlates with what we see when we look, and certainly from my perspective that I've written about, when we look at populations that become westernized and then start to consume our diet. And, you know, a lot of folks, we often hear, and for years, we always talked about bacteria in terms of antibiotics, like we got to get rid of them.
Right.
And now you're talking and you're telling us that there are bacteria that are probiotics, which I'm assuming that means really, really good. And we want these guys to hang around. They're our buddies. They're our friends. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, maybe the types of bacteria and how these changes occur? And you were alluding to a study where we can, you know, we can move to a more friendly neighborhood or create one, you know, within us. How do we do that? This all sounds so sci-fi.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, with thinking about the gut as an ecology, you know, let's think of it as a garden. And it has 1,000 different plants. We've got well over 1,000 species of bacteria within our gut. And the whole goal of our gut as our garden is to increase the species diversity. That gives us a healthy, viable gut that's going to protect us, that's going to break down nutrients, reduce inflammation, and so on. Just be our friend, be there to protect us. So we want to look at this garden, and we want to make sure that we are maintaining the diversity and the health of the garden. Now, imagine this garden every single day. Someone's coming along and throwing acid in there and throwing all kinds of chemicals and uprooting plants and throwing in things that will actually just kill the soil. That's really what's happening to our garden.
In other words, it's the Chernobyl and Fukushima farmers market.
Exactly right. Every single day, right? And 4 or 5 times a day and continuously. And so what we need is a gardener who has the capability to go in that garden every single day and protect against all of these harmful effects that are happening. And that's what a real good probiotic should be. A probiotic should be good bacteria that can get into the gut, make it past the stomach acid alive, which is key, and then get into the intestinal tract where they're supposed to go to work and act as the gardener. They're supposed to clean up the chemical spills. They're supposed to enhance the growth of the good bacteria, suppress the growth of bad bacteria. You know, let's consider those to be the weeds in the garden, and really retill the soil, so fix the lining so that all the good guys can be helped and live a more vibrant life. And then that also increases the diversity. So now, Of all the probiotics I've been researching and working with in a clinical research setting, the spore-based probiotics so far to me are the most effective at doing this. And now these are organisms that are out in the environment naturally, and we're supposed to come in contact with them because we're supposed to be hunters, gatherers, you know, and foragers of food, and we're supposed to eat dirt, essentially. But we just don't anymore. Our world is too sterile, so we don't get the exposure we're supposed to. Now, when we just put these natural guys back in, they get in, they survive through the stomach acid, they get in and they clean up the gut. You know, they support the good bacteria, they prevent the bad bacteria from growing, reduce the inflammation, detoxify the intestines, and seal up that critical gut lining to prevent that leaky gut. And that's the most effective probiotic.
And you mentioned something that's a little bit different from what the folks may have heard before, because often, okay, if you want to get a yogurt, and I tell folks, hey, you know, make sure you don't get the added sugars and make sure that you see active culture. So we know that it's a living food, it's a fermented food. But you talked about spores. So can you tell them how that's maybe different from like looking for live active cultures, you know, in a yogurt? Because a lot of the probiotics out there will also say they have, you know, 50 million, 100 million, you know, whatever the number is of right. live active cultures. And then they'll list some of those bacteria that without you there to translate the microbiology means like beans to most of us. But I haven't really heard much about somebody mentioning spores before.
Yeah, these are very interesting microbes. Now, the problem with most sources of probiotics, even in yogurt or your kombuchas or your kefirs, things like that, they don't survive through the gastric system. And there's a number of studies that have shown this. We've done some research ourselves to show this. And even most of the probiotic products that you get on the shelf have a very hard time surviving through the harsh gastric environment. And so they just don't make it to the intestines alive. Now, a good live culture fermented yogurt without sugars and artificial flavors and all that, the benefit of those come from the ferment itself. So what was made during the fermentation process was all of these important nutrients that the bacteria made, but those bacteria still aren't going to survive. Now, spores are these amazing microbes, endospores they're called, that put a protective armor-like coating around themselves when they're outside of the body. Because the gut, the intestinal tract is their natural home, and when they leave the intestinal tract and they're not out in the body, they put this protective layer around themselves just so they can survive in the outside world. And then that same protective layer allows them to naturally survive through the harsh gastric environment, the stomach acid, and then make it to the intestines alive. And then once they get to your intestines, they know that they're there, they're in their home, and they bust out of this protective layer and they go to work for you right away. Now, these same endospores, Bacillus endospores, have been used in the prescription market in Europe and in Asia since 1958. And they're still out there, the same drug products that have been in the prescription world since 1958 in Europe and Asia are still on the market today for over 60 years. And so they are.
Why do we not know about that? Why do we not have these here?
And that's the really interesting part. We looked at that about 8 years ago when we started researching these, and what we found is early on in the U.S. market in the 1960s, one of the products did hit the market, and they were primarily used at that time to treat gut infections, things like dysentery and Campylobacter salmonella infections. But then broad-spectrum antibiotics came along that are patent-protected, and so pharma companies chose to start marketing patent-protected drugs instead. So they just stopped using them because they couldn't make as much money out of them. And so one of my goals has been to bring those strains, these really unique Bacillus endospores, back to the U.S. market. And that's what we've done through a couple of different products. One is called Just Thrive Probiotics that you can find in your stores, your local stores. And then we also work with physicians on a version called Megaspore Biotic. But there's a lot to be read about these subjects, so people can go to thriveprobiotic.com to do that.
Well, that is, you know, it just boggles my mind, and you know, but it really shouldn't surprise me. You know, I remember now, people are probably familiar with statin medications, for mm-hmm. example, widely prescribed, big money maker. I've certainly used them, and they apply to certain classes of people with the appropriate clinical indications. But you know, they were derived from a fungus that grows on red yeast, but once the pharmaceutical version came out, the actual statins, the first lovastatin was among the very first Mevacor. Then the FDA stepped in and banned any really active red yeast rice extracts because they said, oh, although it's all natural and this is where the drug came from, you're essentially, you know, marketing the drug because it could compete with the pharmacologic, you know, manufactured version at a much cheaper price. And so when you see that red yeast rice extract now in the U.S., it almost never has anything active in it. FDA has stepped in. So, you know, I think sometimes, and it isn't the first time I've gone out on a limb, but you know, probably why my computer is picking up, you know, watching me, and I'm being reported into DC. You know, but I think this is not the first time that sometimes our government has not served us well in terms of the regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, originally most medicines came from some natural form or the other, you know, and we know that, and we know that a lot of drugs, early drugs especially, were derived from medicinal plants and things like that that we knew exist. And then there was a long, you know, history of use by early humans who documented their effects. And then, of course, once you start synthesizing these things chemically, you add, you know, changes to the molecular structure so you can patent it, and that ends up becoming a much more profitable venture. And so that seems to be a lot of times the motivation there. But fortunately, in several countries in Europe and Latin America and also Southeast Asia, they've been using these natural microbes in lieu of using antibiotics during episodes of dysentery or other gut infections. They also use them. One of the other indications is for chronic upper respiratory infection in kids. So they've identified, at least within the marketplace, that these can be just as effective. And so they've been using those drugs for that purpose, and which is good because they've kept up with the research on it. You know, if it's in the market, then somebody's going to spend money doing research on it. And that's how we came across these particular species, and we started studying them. Our whole focus was, can this cure leaky gut? Because leaky gut seems to be at the foundation of most chronic illnesses. You know, and it's hard to avoid because it's induced by just eating food. And, of course, the healthier the food is, the better. But nonetheless, we still have to seal up that gut. And these spores seem to be able to do that, which is really fascinating.
Well, you know, and of course, add where I'm coming from is the other end, because some of the very first cookbooks and chefs were actually physicians, because this is how we treated folks and to get them to take their medicine. When you don't have a teaspoon of sugar to make it sweet and go down, was to make the meals tasty. And we've certainly seen getting people to eat real, authentic, wholesome foods have a positive end. And if we can approach it from both ends, I think that we can really, really get somewhere. Hey, Kieran, I really, really want to thank you for being here today. We've got to have you back. Tell me you'll come back, because I think we just touched the tip of the GI tract, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to come back anytime. Yeah.
This is great. This is great. We're just going to call this part one. We're going to have Kieran back with us. And my friends, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.